What is up, guys? It's Stu. It's another episode of the What the Fuck Gym Talk podcast. And earlier in 2020, I essentially turned off working with new clients. You know, we went from accepting probably 1 in 3, 1 in 4 to probably 1 in 10 throughout 2020 because of everything going on. I needed to take care of my home base, which is Urban Movement. We were getting ready to roll out the license model. I just could not devote the time to working with any additional micro gym owners. I am opening that back up, and that number is 40. I will work with 40 gym owners per month. That is it. I currently probably have anywhere from 15 to 18 spots available right now. If you are interested in working with me without any contract, without any bullshit, literally you book it month to month to month for either 30 minutes or a 60-minute call, you pick, and have full access to Micro Gym University, and have a bat phone where you can literally access me via text, audio, video, phone call, whatever it is, when shit is popping off in your business, then please shoot me a DM right this fucking second on Instagram at WTF Gym Talk and tell me you're interested in working together. I'd love to talk with you more about it. Enough of the plug. Let's get on with the podcast. What is up? It's Stu. It is a special edition of the What the Fuck Gym Talk podcast. This is a road trip project. I did one of these before. Last time was way more depressing. Last time I did a road trip project, which is essentially me doing a long form podcast while I'm fucking driving, I was having to go and give my dog away. And I gave this entire story how, like, my daughter, you know, he's a big pup and it was not going to work. His breed and the aggression and her, she was young, and we had had friends who had had incidents with dogs, and my wife at the time scared the shit out of her. So anyway, found an amazing family, and I talked to you fuckers the entire way there. It was very therapeutic, considering I probably would have been crying like a little bitch the entire way if I hadn't had that outlet. This is a lot different. I don't have anything sad. I'm just going to the beach. And I'm just driving by myself. So this is the road trip project to Myrtle fucking Beach. Dirty Myrtle. Dirty fucking Myrtle. Anyone who's familiar with, like, the beach Carolinas, Myrtle's like the, it's kind of like the trashy fucking place people go. But it's also kind of fun. So if you're into being a little, you know, a little ratchet, but you also want to have a nice beach, you know, Myrtle's kind of the place for you. If you're into those, like, spray shirts, you know, like the ones that get, like, airbrushed with, like, a little, you know, spray paint gun. You see people wear those on, like, boardwalks, like, really kind of trashy places or carnivals. That's Myrtle Beach, just with a lot of sand. So, anyway, that's where I'm going. And I threw out some flares to you guys on different channels here saying, hey, hit me with questions so I have shit to rap on. And I got a bunch of stuff in here. Everything from raising my kid and getting her involved in fitness, divorce, making colleagues out of other prominent micro gym businesses. We got selling LBO, low barrier entry models. So cool. So we're just going to kind of go through this kind of random rant Q&A shit show of a thing, buying buildings, that's in there, even though I just did like a 7-part series on buying a building. We'll see what we can entertain here. Let's go through this divorce one. This is probably the juiciest. I'm not going to, like, do the Q&A and read the question. I'm just going to kind of, like, get an idea on what they want. Okay, so here's the thing. Divorce. I had Sean Pastuch do a whole interview on me on this if you want, like, the details, but, like, the thing with divorce, especially as you're an entrepreneur, is more likely than not, right? Like, if you were rolling the dice in Vegas, like, you'd bet on it. You'd put your money on black for divorce. And that's sad. It sucks. But I will tell you this, and I wouldn't know this. I haven't been remarried, so I haven't tested this theory or this hypothesis yet. I have spoken and interviewed many of people that are divorced, remarried as entrepreneurs, and this is one thing I'm going to lead with if I ever get, you know, remarried and you know, I'm in a relationship now, and you need to make sure that your demands of your time and your energy and your money and your soul
by your business or your aspirations as an entrepreneur are fully manifested and realized by that other person. Meaning, those of you guys that get into relationships, like when you own a gym or a business, and you do the whole, like, you know, you like skirt your stuff, maybe you don't get as much work done, you're in that like honeymoon, you know, goo goo gaga dating phase where you hang out with each other 24/7. If you set that up inappropriately, like if you were to act unlike yourself, unlike your business owner self for 7 months, 9 months, a year and a half, you kind of let things skirt because you're in this, you know, you're in this new awesome relationship with the person, and then you turn it back on once things are kind of like, yeah, you know, they're not as new anymore, or when the business gets in trouble or something like that, you're pulling a 180 on this individual. That's not what they knew. That's not what they fell in love with. That's not what they like realized was you. I cannot recommend enough. Any of you men, women, you're getting in relationships with individuals who also are not entrepreneurs, make sure they understand what they're signing up for, because you already have a very serious relationship with something, your business. Now, a lot of people would argue that your business should fuel your life, not detract from it. Your business should pay you money and not take away from any relationships. It should give you the opportunity to have better experiences with the person you're in a relationship with. And I love that. That's adorable. It sounds like that should be like on one of those Persevere fucking, you know, office posters that has like a picture of an iceberg or some shit like that, or like a cat hanging, like with one paw hanging from the fucking tree. Here's the deal. Yeah, you're not wrong. Small business owners take a lot longer to hit maturity in business because of our lack of resources, mainly cash and experience and strategic partnerships and things of that nature. Entrepreneurs of big companies, they're able to move through that a little bit faster. And it's also, a brick and mortar gym is not the fastest to scale. These are not, you know, we're not selling, you know, we don't have an app product that 1 million people are going to download and is going to make us $1 billion, right? We have a gym. We're going to service at most maybe 300 people, maybe. So it doesn't scale as fast. It doesn't grow as fast. You don't become as rich as fast. It's slower. So those people are like, yeah, but your business should totally fuel it and make it so you can go anywhere with your other person. I get it. I get what you're saying, man. And it took me a long time to get there. Like, it wasn't overnight. But for us small business owners, that's a realization that comes in time. So you need to make sure that whoever you're bunking up with, whoever, you know, is your boo thing at the time, that they understand the hours required. And I would recommend this. As someone who did it poorly and trying to do it better, I would tell you that it just needs to be very clear expectations. This period of time this week is going to be heads down work, and then this period of time is going to be heads down you. Like, I'm not taking any calls, I'm not looking at the emails, whatever. And it can be the same thing if you have kids and things like that. And I you know, moderation, I don't think there is good, because I think it's hard to moderately be in the business and be trying to pay attention to your kids' t-ball game, right? I think it's difficult to moderately fucking, you know, pay attention to what your girlfriend's saying over the dinner table when you guys are having a discussion and checking your emails. No, like, you know, people are like, oh, moderation. Like, I'm not either side of that argument. I do moderation in a lot of things, and sometimes I go all in and sometimes I don't. Like, I'm across the spectrum. I don't, like, commit to one fucking paradigm. But in that scenario, what I'm trying now and what's working for me is going all in, heads down business, no distractions. I fucking run through walls daily. And then at night, like, I stopped working so much at night. I used to be a fiend. I would come home, hang out with my wife at the time and the kid for like 90 minutes, scarf down some food down my fucking ginger pie hole, and then I was right back to work editing. And I'd do that. I would be up to like 2 in the morning and then, you know, wake up on those nights at like 6, or go to bed at like 9 and wake up at 3. It was rough. So one thing I've done is I'm not working late at night anymore. I'm still getting up hella early. I still love getting up early, but I'm not working the late nights anymore. So once I, you know, once I kind of close down shop, you know, right around six, I'm done. Like I, you know, I might do a little something, but I'm not in it anymore, up editing or sending emails or doing whatever. So I don't know. That's the advice, the ignorant, non-SME fucking advice that I have based on that. You know, getting divorced, I was super fortunate that my divorce was amicable as fuck. We're still very good friends. We talk every single day. We got a kid, a four-year-old. Yeah, I'm just fortunate. Nobody did the other person wrong. It was just a bad match, and we were able to call it. And I, you know, if you're in a relationship like that and you know it, just call it early while there's still good blood there. Don't wait to fucking resent each other. Same thing with a business partner. Business partnerships are exactly the same. I think that's why I get a lot of business partner, like people that hire me are business partners who realize they're having some issues and they want a mediator or someone in between to, you know, lend their advice. And yeah, it's the same way. If you're in a bad partnership, you know you're in a bad partnership, but you're like, you just don't want the inconvenience and this shit show of having to break it off. Trust me, break it off sooner than later. Because the longer you stay in it, the more you're going to resent that human being and just fucking explode one day. And it just becomes, and then the more things that have gone by, because I promise you, if you're in a business partnership that is doing poorly, and the longer you keep it going, the business is making less money. Because you both have different visions, you're both arguing, you're not spending the money appropriately, whatever it is. You know, if you get him out or he gets you out, they could reallocate those funds to that full-time person or to marketing. Like, every month you waste in a bad partnership, you are also losing a considerable amount of your business. Like, of potential business, of future business, of profit. So just get the fuck out of it. And in relationships, personal relationships, if you got a kid involved especially, every year you're doing that, you just got to... You're just going to make it harder for that kid when you get older. I'm super lucky we did it when my daughter was young. My parents got divorced. I still remember when they got divorced. It was a horrible, nasty, we're talking fucking cops getting called, like the worst of the worst divorce scenarios. Very hostile mom and dad towards each other. And I never wanted that for my kid, so I'm super happy that she doesn't have that. She has just a slightly different, larger family. That's it. Like, she's, you know, she's going to have two Christmases, like... I always joke, like, she doesn't get it, but I joke with her. I'm like, you realize you made it? Like, you've got, like, two houses. You have two Christmases, two birthdays. Like, we still celebrate everything together. Like, we still all get together for the holidays. But, like, she still gets, like, pretty much double. I'm like, you fucking lucked out, you little shit. Anyway. Yeah, I'm trying to think of anything else on the divorce side based on this question. Did you ever... Okay. Where this question goes is, do you believe your business or your business aspirations are to blame for the end result of your marriage? No. It just wasn't a good fit. If anyone here is a perfect fit for somebody, like a perfect fit, a business can't break you up. And again, I'm not Dr. Drew. This is just one human being fucking spitting it as he sees it. If you really are perfect for each other, like you really, that is your ride or die, like that's your other person, a business isn't going to break you up. Like you're going to you're meant for each other, like that you're going to come back together. Where I think it really comes out is I believe in being able to do what you want to do when you want to do it. And I believe in the moment in which your business gets in the way of your family or your family gets in the way of the business, you've got a problem. And what I mean by that is, if you're not in control of your business so you can go to your kid's t-ball game, you have done it wrong at somewhere along the line, or you haven't done enough, or you just didn't do it right, or you missed the mark. And there's really no arguing that. Let's say you're a micro gym owner and you're 7 years in and you still can't go to your kid's recital, or you can't take weekends off with your family for a vacation. You fucked up along the way. There's no doubt about it. And for you to not place blame, for you to put blame anywhere but yourself is a bitch ass move. Okay? In the same token, if you have a business and you are guilted when you do go to work, you are guilted and made to feel shitty that you haven't done it right and you can't spend more time with the family, that doesn't help. Like a partner, you know, husband, wife, whatever, that makes you feel like shit because you can't do the things because your business isn't doing great, that's not like that's fixing the problem. It's like bitching more about something you already know sucks. Like, you already feel guilty enough. And I've talked to plenty of people about this. Like, they feel horrible because they still work and they cannot pick their kids up from school. Like, their business isn't at a point where they can hire that coach or whatever. Or all, you know, I heard the fucking worst. I had a gym owner tell me that his neighbor, like, you could see the backyards from each other's houses, put up this giant playground set. Like, this cool playground set for his kids. And it was like $6,000 or something. And now his kids go over there and play on it, and he has to hear about it, and he can't afford to do something like that. So he's like, and I don't want to go get the cheap fucking $500 one off Amazon and look like a fucking schmuck. So he's like, maybe I'll use some of my EIDL. I'm like, no. Like, you cannot be playing Keeping Up with the Joneses and spend your EIDL money on your kid's fucking bouncy house fucking swing set tree fort. But that was a heartbreaker for me. That's, you know, I go to work for those guys every fucking day to get them closer to that point, to where they can have those things. But anyway, if you have a partner making you feel bad already for shit you already feel shitty about, I think that's that individual, you gotta have a sit down conversation, get a couples counselor, because that is toxic as fuck. That's a really bad thing. So that's what I mean when I say, you know, be able to do what you want to do when you want to do it. And you've definitely got problems with the business when the business doesn't allow you to, you know, do what you want to do when you want to do it. And you have problems with your partner when your family or your partner doesn't allow you to do or gives you grief for doing what you have to do when you have to do it. So anyway, I'm going to move on from that, that whole thing. It's, that's a tough, I mean, that's just divorce and all that. I always feel weird talking on shit I don't know anything about. I mean, obviously I have my own experience, but I can't like give you guys good advice. And I love giving like tactics and like do this. Okay, let's go on. This LBO question I thought was actually pretty interesting. I'm going to frame this one. I'm probably going to frame up exactly as Atali. I want to say Atali. Atali, and I'm so sorry, dude, for butchering the fuck out of this. But essentially, he's asking about low barrier offers, LBOs. And their current situation is they have a 45-minute orientation or a consultation before the prospect can start a free week. And they try to incentivize them, you know, during that thing to get them started immediately. And if they can't close them immediately, then they get the free week. But their goal is they want to streamline that sales process and kind of X out that whole 45-minute consultation altogether. So he's kind of asking, like, how do I do that with a low-barrier offer? So here's the deal, guys. Low-barrier offers should not have consultations, ever. Like when I say consultations, let's call it a formal consultation. We're talking 30 minutes or more of you sitting down and getting to know that human being. They should not have those. Because your low barrier offer should be getting grabbed at a high volume. That's the whole purpose. A free week, like what Urban Movement has, is a low barrier offer. And when we run those, they get grabbed up a lot. So that's a lot of people. I don't have the staff. I run a super lean fucking, I run tight ass lean payroll. And there's no way that I'd be able to allocate 30 minute or more consultations for everybody. So at Urban, we have like a 15 minute ideally, but we can do it in 10 minute, you know, informal consult, if you will. We're talking greeting, tour, workout explanation, price prezo, and then get them ready for the workout. Like we, you know, talk about the offers, all that, then get them in their spot, get them their equipment, get them going. And we have that dialed in very efficiently, like fucking McDonald's. So yes, you know, I think with your low barrier offer, you need to ditch that altogether. But again, here's the thing is I like a low barrier offer. I also call this an evergreen offer for any of you guys who are enrolled in Micro Gym University. A low barrier or an evergreen offer is the LBO that you run throughout the year. So it could be, you know, 21 days for $21, buy 1 week or get 1 week free, try one class free, whatever it may be. It could be a free consultation if you want. If you're a PT first model, it could be a free, you know, 30-minute consultation and a movement assessment. But what you find, though, is once you put real good marketing behind those and marketing money, you have too many of them. You can't, like, you just don't have enough staff to do them all. But anyway, I believe in these evergreen offers, and I think those are offered all throughout the year. What I think you really need to focus on is the front-end offer. And a front-end offer is like a seasonal offering, right? A seasonal front-end offer that is generally paid to play, meaning buy 1 month, get 1 month free, or your first month is 50% off, or 10 days for $20. Those are paid offers where someone actually has to make some level of a financial commitment up front. So those are the two different things. And to this individual, to Atali, asking this question, ditch your consult and 45-minute thing. You need to dial in a 15-minute consult. What you need to do, buddy, is enroll in MicroGym University into the sales course. And you need to go through those courses, especially the straight-to-class sales course. That is that would definitely help you out. So anyway, that's my thought on that. You know what? I'm just going to rant on this a little bit. Offers in general, the offer doesn't matter. Like, it literally, I get at that question asked all the time. What offer should I run? It doesn't fucking matter. Do you know how many different offers there are out there that work, that where the recipient, the business owners or owner, is making a lot of money? I know gyms that do no free offers. You coming in, you doing a 90-minute assessment, it's going to cost you $95 or $100. And if you choose to sign up afterwards, great. Like, I know people doing that at scale. I know Metabolic does, they've never changed it, ever. 10 days, 20 bucks. 10 days, 20 bucks. That's like the equivalent of Lifetime Fitness and Gold's Fitness doing a month free. Like, those health clubs have been running one free month for 35, 45 years. Urban Movement does a free week. Like, it doesn't matter. I've got gyms that do, 30 days for 30 bucks, 2 weeks free. Right? Like, it does not matter. Your offer is irrelevant. And I think everyone thinks, like, but is there one where the psychology of the numbers brain fucked the prospect into thinking that this is the... No, stop it. Like, stop. Like, just no. Just come up with an offer that works. And the key with your offer, it has to just logistically work. The only offer that I would say is a quote-unquote bad offer is one you can't fulfill at the desired scale. So if you have a low barrier offer or a paid front-end offer and you have a goal in your mind, like, I want to sell 30 of these a month. Cool. Could you service 30 of these a month with the way you have it set up? And if the answer is yes, then rock on. Now just market it appropriately, put the dollars behind it or put the organic behind it and run with it. And if it's no, then you got to change your offer. Simple as that. Now, there's bumpers you can put on things, guardrails. Like at Urban, we have a LBO, the free week. We also have a paid front-end offer, which is our reset series. But we only allow up to two new people to try out per class. We got to keep our spots open. We have a lot of paying members that got to come through. But we cap at two. Orange Theory does the exact same thing. And those of you guys that are in the position where you're like, oh, it doesn't really matter. I mean, I could take people at any time. That's fine. Like, then cool. You could take people anytime. It's not about whether you could take them, because I realize most micro gyms don't have every class sold out. But it's more along the lines of what can you service well? I dropped in at a client gym back in the day when I was doing consult, like when I first started. It was, I think, maybe like 2016, going towards into 2017. And I pop in, I went and visited them, and they were really jazzed that I dropped in, because they're like, dude, we got five prospects coming in tonight. I'm like, oh, dope. What class times? They're like, oh, this one. I'm like, huh? Like, yeah, I got five. I'm like, it's you and one other person. Give me a shirt, I'll fucking help. Like, give me a fucking staff shirt, because you're going to need the fucking help. Oh, no, we got this, watch it. What, like... Five people. Like, you cannot give, and then, like, and two were together. Two was a couple. The three others were single. And it you know, he immediately afterwards was so embarrassed. It went poorly. He only closed one person. But yeah, he was not equipped for it. He couldn't give a good experience. Like, we have an experience laid out. I think when he got greedy is what it was. Right? Like, you know, we had worked on this, you know, how to do the sales process, how to make sure you were able to follow up. Like, and I think this guy just got greedy, and he obviously didn't know I was popping in that day. And yeah, he just kind of got caught with his dick in his hand. And it just, yeah. So guys, please, when you're thinking about your offers, there's not an offer better than others. And don't be like, oh, this gym's killing it, I'm going to use their offer. I saw Jason Kalipi. He was doing, when he was opening up a bunch of NC Fits, he had $99 for the first month. And I kid you not, there was an entire Facebook group thread, no less than 100 gym owners all talking about how they were going to switch over to that, because that seems like it's got to work. It's worked good for Jason Kalipa and the NC Fit Empire, so it's got to work for me. And I was just like, you know, maybe for some of you guys it would work. Like, some of you guys probably maybe similar size, similar staff, similar whatever. But other than you guys are just literally just looking at what other people are doing, and you're just making a decision. And I really want to hope that the independent mom and pop micro gym industry is moving past that. Like, we're actually realizing that the axe that we have to sharpen is business acumen, and we're not making decisions because the popular, successful, or perceived to be successful gyms in the country are doing X, Y, and Z. Like, the amount of gyms that rushed out and bought a bunch of torpedoes after I made that video, and I, you know, had some interviews with Mike Jones over at Alchemy 365, because they use torpedoes. And then, like, I bought a bunch of torpedoes and this class didn't take off. I'm like, did you fucking think buying torpedoes was going to make the goddamn class take off? Is that really went through your fucking brain? You literally thought this piece of equipment, like, people would show up fucking just smeared against the windows of your fucking front door glass. Like, let me in, you have torpedoes. Like, with their fat faces pressed up against, just breathing heavy, getting half chub over torpedoes. Get out of here. Like, it just, I love to think that we're past that. But sometimes, I don't know. There's always outliers, right? There's always going to be someone that's going to disappoint, you know, that's going to remind me that some of us are still back in 2008. All right. So, let's, you know, moving on to that. So, I got hit with another question on buildings, buying a building. I don't want to do a huge rant on this. This is James Moran, one of my clients, good dude. James, you know I did an entire 7-part podcast on this, like, in the past 3 months. But I did ask for questions, and you were nice enough to ask a question, so I'm going to fucking rant on it. And when you create content, guys, I need to follow my own advice. I say this all the time. Just because you created the content doesn't mean you should assume people listen to it, which is why you need to create the same kind of content 1,000 times over. So I'm going to not be a hypocritical fuckface and follow my own advice and do this. And those of you who are diligent, diehard, good little WTF Gym Talk fans, I appreciate it. I'm going to try to put a different spin on it for you so you don't have to fucking fast forward this. I've actually got a different insight too. When I made those podcasts, I was in a much different place with my commercial real estate property than I am today. I could maybe give you guys a little bit more insight into this. So right now I feel like I am probably, there would be nobody better in the entire fitness industry, in the micro gym scene, to hire if you wanted to talk about developing commercial real estate, selling commercial real estate, you know, making commercial real estate a part of your growth plan in the future, than me. The past, I'd say 65 days, with what we're doing with our efforts to lease our building and the things that I, you know, just some of the meetings I've had and the people I've had to talk to and the bigger picture stuff I've been able to see, I feel very much more educated on this than I ever have. So, James, the question, the economics of buying versus leasing. Leasing is generally the best bet economically for a micro gym owner. And by the way, this road is getting super annoying. I'm sure you guys are listening to this with the audio, and I'm such a stickler for, like, not having shitty audio. I just wanted to tell you I'm very sorry. Fucking dirty Myrtle. So leasing is generally the best scenario because the amount of cash needed in order to buy a building could look at like 10 to 20% down payment for the purchase price, right? So here's the economics if you want to buy. Oh, God, this road is so loud. 10 to 20% down of the total asking price, all right? So if your building was $1 million, you would need $100,000 to $200,000 in cash, in liquid, available to give to the seller. In addition to that, you're going to have closing costs to the tune of $10,000. Including that, you're going to have upfit. I promise you, you're going to need upfit because you're going to have to change the use or rezone or add things or whatever. And your upfit could be anywhere from, let's call it, maybe $85 to $135 per square foot. So if you needed to upfit 10,000 square feet or 5,000 square feet, multiply that by a range of around $85 to $135 per square foot, just to give you an idea of what you could anticipate. I'm gonna be so mad if I listen back to this audio and this is not even fucking usable because of this shit fucking road. All right, I'm done complaining about it. All right, so those are the initial, and those are just, by the way, initial economics. You're gonna need a real estate attorney. That'll be several thousand dollars. Your MEP, you're gonna need engineers, mechanical, electrical, plumbing engineers. That will be several thousands and thousands of dollars. You will need all the equipment, the flooring, the signage, the lights, the bathroom fixtures, all these things that aren't included technically in most GC's quotes. Like they're not gonna probably quote you for your flooring. You're gonna need to do that. Like you're gonna have to get the equipment. Now with some SBA loans, you can roll that shit in. I was able to roll an additional like $17,000 for equipment into our SBA loan. Because we ended up using most of it for the overflow. Our build out went considerably, like double what it should have been. Anyway, so with those are the economics, James. That's what you're looking at. So yes, of course, leasing is going to be better. Now, when you're looking long term, the only reason I would say that buying the building is the best route is, number one, you have the funds and you don't have to go into some insane amount of debt. Like, yeah, like a mortgage on like right now I'm in, you know, on paper, my building's got value, but I'm also, I owe the bank on paper, you know, what, fucking $500,000, something like that. So I'm $500,000 in debt to the bank. Thank God, better road. Okay. So yeah, like that's the thing, man. Like that's, you know, you got to look at it like, okay, if I'm going to do this and am I going to go into debt? Should I go into crazy debt? Like if you're taking out credit cards and personal loans and friend loans, family loans and a bank mortgage, no, do not do it. I had cash, people. I saved up. I had a fucking banging ass CrossFit business. I had a business partner to split that with me. We have 50-50, and right now I'm 51, he's 49. So, but yeah, going, like if you guys are gonna have to take out multiple different forms of loans to cover this shit, I don't recommend. Like, you do not want to be leveraged out your ass. Because here's the thing with commercial real estate. I know everyone's like, but I'm in a booming era, Stu, you don't get it. Yeah, I don't fucking get it. Yes, I fucking get it. It's 2021. Every fucking major city and sub-major city is booming. And everywhere that with the ripple effect within that major, or like around that major city, is booming too. I fucking get it. I'm so sick and tired of everyone like selling me like, oh my God, but they just put in a fucking Lululemon. Like, I get it. It's awesome. Commercial real estate is at an all-time high. It did not dip for a single second. It actually went up during 2020, the pandemic. Like, I get it, guys. Don't sell me on it. I know it's gonna be great. That means if you are saying, well, my area is growing, it's be great, put it within a decade. Everyone thinks their area is going to be great in like 3 to 5 years. They're fucking wrong. So fucking wrong. Your area isn't going to be great. It's going to take 2 cycles, with a cycle being 10 years, probably for you to cash out of that thing at a crazy dollar amount, like a really good ROI. Yes, there are very, very, very few outlier scenarios where someone bought a building for $960,000 and then in 6 years sold it for $3.1 million. That does happen, but it's very rare. So, with that being said, I don't know what you should be like from an appreciation rate. You know, you need to go ahead and you got to get better ideas to your area. What is real estate selling for? What are some comps in the area? And your broker, like, should be earning their commission. They should be doing that for you. So you get an idea. Cool. These are the past 25 commercial buildings that sold in the past 5 years that are similar to mine. 25 is probably a lot. Maybe more like 10. And these are what they were sold at. And then you just compare what is the average sales price per square foot. Right now with my building, we're in a beautiful fucking spot because we just have a comp. Literally, like, you walk out my door and you look to the left, boom. A comp just went for $344 per square foot. A building smaller than mine just sold for 3.1. But I have no intention to sell. And that's what I want to kind of get into on this next piece. Zero intention to sell. God, no. Rich people do not get rid of their real estate, my friends. Rich people hold on to it. I'm sorry, wealthy people. Rich people actually would. Somebody who wants to be rich would sell. I want to be wealthy, right? Wealthier than I am. So I will hold on to that real estate. My goal is to buy a building every 10 years and do this over and over and over again. So, you know, to James's, he's got a little bit, you know, he's a real estate guy by education and past experience. His comment here is that, you know, he wants to make sure people realize that when you buy a building, you're essentially not getting cheaper rent. And I went on a big rant on that on that podcast series, but he's not wrong. Here's the numbers again, if you've never heard it before. I purchased my building for $960,000. Okay. I used an SBA 504 loan. From there, we ended up putting $375,000 into upfit and rezoning and all that other good stuff, okay? Considerably higher than the $175,000 that the GC originally quoted us. So I don't care how good of a friend it is or your wife's dad or whatever the fuck, it's always later. The timeline is always 6 months longer than it should be or a year longer than it should be. Maybe 18 months longer than it should be. And it's generally significantly more expensive. At a minimum, generally 30% at a minimum. All right. So 960 is what the sales price was. 375 is what we put into it. So we're at 1.3 mil. And what was I trying to give? I was giving the numbers on this. Okay. And my mortgage on that is $6,700 per month. It's pretty dope. I was renting a building smaller, but I was only renting it, and my rent was like $6,100 a month. So my mortgage is what? $500-$600 more. Now, a lot of immature gym owners are like, that's so dope, man. Your rent's only gonna be $6,700 a month. No fuckface. I drain profit out of my gym business to pay my real estate company more. Because I obviously, as I told you, have a goal of buying a building every 10 years. And I need my real estate company to show profit. Right? It needs to make more money than the mortgage, taxes, and insurance are. And common area maintenance. So that's why I charge myself more. Now, a lot of you don't want to do that. I actually, I'm working with NC Fit Alpharetta. Yes, I work with, I do business consulting with other license and franchise models. Yes. And they built a brand new building. It's fucking dope. It's incredible. If you haven't seen it, it's brand new. Go check out NC Fit Alpharetta. Absolutely gorgeous. But they have zero aspirations of doing what I'm doing. They know the value in owning it, right? And you know, we're working on what their future real estate plan is going to be with that, how they're going to capitalize on that wealth. But anyone who's just going to, like, you're going to go into all that debt to have cheap rent, you can get cheap rent. That's not impossible. Be like, well, not in my area. Relatively cheap rent, fuckface. I can't get you a 6,000-7,000 square foot building for $2,000 a month. But if that's why you're doing it for cheap rent, then do not buy commercial real estate. Buy commercial real estate so that you have the freedom to do what the fuck you want with your business. So I was telling you guys right now, I feel more ready to, or I feel better giving commercial real estate advice and investment advice on commercial real estate as a micro gym owner than I think anybody else could give you because of what we're going through now. During the pandemic, I had about 3,000 square feet that I wanted to lease out because I needed the rental revenue. And I figured that there might be some opportunities, people needing to store stuff, or I was even trying to give it to the hospital, like rent it out to hospitals to do testing for COVID. Like I was doing everything. Well, guess what? Everybody that walked through the building, all they wanted was the whole thing. They saw 3,000 square feet for lease listed on LoopNet and on the MLS listings. They came in to like, well, what about for the whole thing? Or would you sell it? Over and over and over. And I'm like, I'm not leasing you the whole building. I got plans. I got shit to do with Urban. But I'll take your name and number down, right? And my broker will take your contact information down. If when we change our mind in a few years, we'll do it. Because I've always planned in a few years, I would want to shut down the Charlotte Urban movement at that location. I'd like to maybe open it up in a smaller location that I just lease maybe. Or maybe if I buy another building, I could throw it in there. But I want to rent that out. I have a 10,500 square foot building that I can get rent in $25 to $28 a square foot. Do the math on that. If you did the math on that, it's a lot of money. Take out my $6,700 mortgage plus, you know, throw an extra $10,000 of taxes in there and insurance. Yeah, it's a sick profit center. It is a fantastic profit center. I'd make more money per month that than I've ever done owning a gym, ever. As an owner, the most I think I've ever paid myself per month owning a gym was like in the 85, it was like in the $9,000 range. That was the most. And then I opened up WTF and then like I stopped taking my salary at the gym and reinvested it back into the business. But this is serious money we're talking about. Do you know how nice that is coming out of 2020 to know that I can just sun down the fucking gym and lease this building out? And I am now, I mean, like I'm in a better financial position. Guys, I know it's crazy. Those of you guys that are thinking the real estate thing, you're like, well, I want to keep doing this. I want to grow it. But good, so do I. I want to grow it too. There's a lot of other growth opportunities. You could keep your gym in there. You could keep the business and sell it to someone. And then you have them as a tenant and you sold the business. Like, there's plenty of opportunities. All I'm saying is that when you own the fucking property, you, my friend, have now entered an elite classification of human beings. An elite. And you have so much good things that could happen for you and your family in the future. So that's it on the commercial real estate side. I'll keep you guys posted. We've got, I actually have the whole building listed right now. Go take a look. Go on LoopNet. Go on the interwebs. I've got the whole building listed. We've had it for like almost a year now because I want to see what the market would, what it would pay. That's how I know I could get 25 to 28 bucks a square foot if I throw in a good $200,000 in TI. That's a plan for the future, my friends. And I'm really looking forward to that. I'm enjoying, you know, I love having the gym. I love it. I love having my laboratory. It's a great HQ for the license model, but someday we'll sun it down eventually. And then I'll just have a bunch of Urban Movement licenses that I can pop in and travel to or I'll just open up another UM in Charlotte, just in a smaller building. So anyway, moving on. This was actually a really good one. This is one Nat sent this to me. She's coming through into Charlotte. She's from Georgia. But what's your plan when Gus becomes a... I'm actually going to read this one as a Q&A because I don't know how to summarize it. What is your plan when Gus becomes a preteen? Gus, for those of you guys who don't know, is the name of my daughter. It's not her real name. Her real name is Francie. Francis. Her mother and everyone else calls her Francie. I call her Gus. And why do I call her Gus? Because it's fucking funny. That's all. When she becomes a preteen, what are the biggest things you want her to know? What are your biggest concerns, if any? So it's kind of general. It doesn't really like kind of land on anything in particular, but it's a great, great question. I really appreciate you sending that through. My daughter's turns 4 at the end of May, and so 4, what's a preteen? Like that's 7, 8, 9, right? 10, 11, something like that. Are those preteens? Like 10 and 11? 12? Yeah, those are preteens? Okay. I'm a horrible dad. Oh, you want to hear how horrible of a fucking dad I am? I use Insight Tax. And me and my ex-wife, we go back and forth. 1 year she gets the claim. Gus is a dependent. And the other year I get to back and forth. Well, this is my year, right? Good for me. A little bit of a tax break. and I filled out my daughter's, her information on the tax form. I spelled her name wrong like 5 times. Spelled it wrong completely. I think I got her social wrong too. Like I completely, but I didn't even do it on accident. Like I did it, I spelled it wrong 5 times because that's how I thought it was spelled. Like I before E, I don't know, I fucked something up. That's how big of a moron I am. Like dad of the year. I was sending an email to John Briggs, the founder of Insight Tax. And he was like, he's like, don't worry, I won't tell anybody. I'm like, fuck that, I got to tell everybody now. Anyway, so not a great dad in that regard. I feel like I'm a good dad in other areas. But I made a video a while back on my personal. I don't do it like, I don't know if any of you guys follow me at Stu Brower on Instagram, but I don't post a lot. It's generally my kid or me and the girlfriend or, you know, some whiskey or one of my electric motorcycle, like something like that. Like, I don't know. It's really not that interesting. But I made a video one day, right? Go figure. I bought a new GoPro, which fuck, I wish I would have brought my GoPro. Going to the beach, and I totally fucking forgot the GoPro. God damn it. You know, you always know you forget something and you didn't really know what it is. I brought my big camera, but I didn't bring the GoPro. God damn it. All right. I'll buy one. All right. Sorry. So I brought the GoPro to the gym and she likes to run around and in between classes when there's no one there, like on days when I have her, that's the only time I really go into the gym, maybe the workout, but, I'll go into the gym with her and she just fucking jumps over the boxes. Like any of you guys who got kids at the gym, you know what a cool like thing it is for them. It's like a big playground. She hangs from the low rings, all that cute shit. Well, she was hanging from the low rings. I was like, hey, do a pull up. And I mean, I don't even think she knows what a pull-up is, but she did, and she just replied, she tried, and then replied with, I can't. I'm like, you can do anything. She's like, I can't do it. I'm like, you can do anything. Well, anyway, long story short, I get her to just start, I can do anything, and it's so cute, and then I kind of like, I give her a little bit of help down by her ankles, and she does the full pull-up, and she's, you know, ecstatic, and it just, It makes all the good tingles happen inside of the deep cockles of your heart and the subcockles. Deep in there, you feel good. So, to go to Nat's question, what do I want her to know? I want her to know that she can't actually do anything. How fucked up that is. Like, honey, you can't actually do anything. Like, you can't fly. There's certain things you can't do. There's not, I mean, whatever, but hypothetically speaking, I want you to feel like you still can try at anything, right? I want her to believe that if she wants to be the president of the United States, or a gold medalist, that guess what? Those are insanely audacious, just obscene goals to have. But I support you 1,000%, and only the fucking crazy ones who believe that they can change the world or that they can influence the world or that they can achieve the unachievable, they're the only ones that actually do. So baby girl, big Gus, let's go fucking get it. Like, let's fucking go. Like, that. I want to, like, I just always want to have real conversation. I'm one of those dads, I don't do, like, goo-goo gaga talk. I don't know, like, I love my kid. She's cute as a button. As a button, she's cute, but I don't do, like, cutesy talk. I do, like, I talk to her like she's literally, like, a 40-year-old dude. Like, I talk straight to her. She'll be like, hey, daddy, can we do and play with our twains? I'm like, I don't want to play a fucking trains right now. Like, I talk to her like an adult, or I'll be like watching TV with her, and she'll be watching SportsCenter with me, and I'll be like, can you believe the pick that the Browns had? And she'll just look at me like, I have no idea what you're talking about. And I just keep talking to her as if she does. Anyway, I want my kid, I always want to communicate with my kid in a very realistic fashion, but one that's also, I'm supportive. Like, even if she told me she wanted to do something that I didn't, like, agree with, or it wasn't my thing, I'm still going to support the shit out of her, regardless of what that is. I really hope that when she's young and I kind of can control her because she's small, right, that's what we do with our kids. We, like, put them in sports they don't want to be. Like, I just want to expose her to a bunch. Instruments, sports, experiences. So she has an opportunity to kind of play with some different skill sets. If you guys have been watching Sivan Montesante, I think his name is, he is the former head of CrossFit HQ's media team. He's a filmmaker. He's fucking, he's just like, he's heavy on the Instagrams with anti-COVID, anti-vax stuff. But anyway, the reason I brought him up, he has this thing called Three Plain Brothers, and he has three sons. These kids are fucking, if they don't all grow up to be gold medalists in everything, like everything, I don't know what. I mean, they're skateboarding, they're boxing, they're playing tennis, they're dancing, they're doing gymnastics. I mean, he has them in everything. I think that I love what that dude is doing and the stuff, the content he's sharing with his kids. That's what I just want. I just want to be able to expose her to a ton of stuff. I want to be in the financial position that her experiences, the things that I'd love for her to be able to experience, aren't limited because of my financial situation. So I want to be able to afford to do that stuff for her. That's why daddy goes to work every day. I want her to be black. Like, everyone talks about, like, rich kids. I don't like being spoiled. I want her to be fortunate. I would love to be able to leave my daughter things, you know, property, whatever, money, all that stuff when I die. I just want to set her up as great as possible because my parents were unable to do that for me. So from a, like, fitness, athletic standpoint, I don't really know yet. She's too young. She fucks around with her bike and she rides scooters and she loves jumping around the gym. I don't know. I don't know where she's going to develop and all that stuff yet. Being a dad, man, I've been talking about it in a lot of the shoot the shits because I've had a couple other dads on there. It's a mind fuck. It is a complete mind fuck, especially coming from someone I never wanted to be a dad. It was not part of the plan. I love my fucking kid. I just wouldn't change anything. But it wasn't part of the plan. I went and got a vasectomy. Like, you know, after I got divorced, I went and got a vasectomy. Don't need to be knocking up any of the hussies. Just joking. I don't need to. I got a vasectomy, and that's going to be one and done. The Gus is it, man. That's it. So I want to go back to another question here. This one, and I don't need to ask, I don't need to repeat it because it's just creating colleagues with prominent business owners in our industry. That was a mission of mine from Jump Street. I was a nobody. If anyone's never heard my Box Pro Summit story, I'll tell it again right here. In 2014 or 15 or 16 or 14, I can't remember, the Box Pro magazine, right, which is like entrepreneur magazine for micro gym owners, invited the top 50 gyms from across the country to a free summit where they put them up in a hotel, paid for all the food, all the drink, and then there were speakers and workshops and activities all weekend. And I wasn't invited. And rightfully so. I mean, CrossFit South End was a great business. Very high profit margin, good revenue. I was remote. I didn't have to be there. I had made it as far as I was concerned of myself at that point in my career. And I wasn't invited because nobody knew who the fuck I was. And I feel like it was just 2016 because I feel like I've been making videos, but I still wasn't popular enough. So what I did was I heard about this thing. And I heard about it through Box Pro because I was writing for them. I was writing free blogs every month. Heather Hartman, who is one of the managing editors over there, was amazing and gave me a shot to write blog articles for free. So it was a way for me to get my name out. And if you still put in Box Pro Magazine, Stuart Brower, they still have it up there. They have all the articles I ever written. It's super cool. I really hope they don't take that down. I actually need to go and like screenshot or download those. But I did that to get my name out and to add a little bit of credibility behind me because nobody knew who I was. And I knew what I wanted and I knew what I had to do to get there. And that was get my name out by any means necessary. But even with me writing for them, they didn't ask me to go. So I hear about the Box Pro thing and I actually reach out to Heather and I tell her, I'm like, hey, heard about this Box Pro thing. I know you guys didn't ask me, but here's what I've done. Here's why I think it would be dope. What I think I could bring to it. And I'd love to go. Like, I literally was trying to invite myself. You ever had to invite yourself to something? Super humbling. Oh my God, you feel like a fucking loser. It's just, hey, can I come to this thing that you didn't invite me to where you fucking put me up in a $300 night hotel and pay for all the food and booze and I get to hang out with Chris Cooper and John Swanson and Juliette Starrett and all these fucking just thugs in the fitness industry. Ben Bergeron was there. Who else was there? Craig over at Diablo CrossFit was there. I mean, there's just a ton of just badass names, like people I had looked up to. So Brian Strump, my buddy from Charlotte, he was going. Anyway, so she says no. Like, fat no. We're full, dude, and you can't just invite yourself. All right, yep, fair enough. But hey, listen, I'm always gonna try. I'm gonna try everything. I'll take a no. I'm not afraid to hear a no. And later on down, like, I don't know, maybe like months, like 2 months later, 3 months later, she hits me up. She goes, hey, we had like a person cancel. You're next up. You ready? You want to go? I was like, fuck yes. Like, I remember telling I got that email and I like jumped up and fist pumped the air. And Isaac's like, what the fuck? That was such a moment for me. I felt like, even though it was two ways. Number one, I was so grateful that she thought of me when someone canceled. I wonder who the person canceled was. I wish I knew that. Anyway, I was so grateful that they thought of me. But I was even more, I was like proud of myself. And I feel it sounds so cocky, but I was so proud of myself that I had the fucking audacity. That's the best word to describe it. The fucking audacity to even ask. To fucking assume that they were going to do that. They would even entertain that idea. Just, yeah, there's no other word to describe to use that, but fucking straight up audacity. And I was really proud of myself. It obviously worked out. But again, long way to get back to colleagues and making friends and colleagues with prominent business owners. So I go to this thing, and there were so many successful other gym owners there. And there were some that were just pricks, like standoffish. And maybe it's because they didn't like the WTF content. Like, they didn't want to get it associated with me. Or they didn't like the way I delivered my stuff, which is fine. I don't judge them. I get it. I know it's not the most palatable. So, but I realized there quickly that there were a lot of people that were really cool. And Guido Trinidad was there. Is Guido or Guido? I feel like Guido's a slur for Italians. So it's probably Guido. I'm sorry. Either way, I'm really sorry about that. This is why nobody wanted to sit with me at the table. But I realized then that, hey, this thing was really cool. I'm so blessed to have had this opportunity and network with these people. But this is what I realized at that thing. There were very few people that I spoke with that were doing anything above and beyond what I was doing. And I do not mean that in a conceited, cocky way. They were peers. They were all doing great. But we were all doing things similar, just different flavors. But it was all the same ingredients and recipe. Same ingredients, same recipe, different flavor. But I knew then, if I was going to win in this game, in this industry, long term, I had to be going somewhere where the food, the ingredients were completely different, the recipes were completely different, and people didn't think. Because the problem when you're around everyone from the same cohort or fitness methodology or organization, they all think the same way. You guys know that, especially CrossFit owners. My God, every fucking CrossFit gym looks the same. It does. Some of them are just nicer than others, but they essentially look exactly the same. You could describe one gym to one blind person and he's essentially visited them all. That's it. So that's when my exploration for other micro gym models that did things differently, high-low, core power yoga, Alchemy 365, Metabolic, Burn Bootcamp, Shred 415, like all these other brands, Conbody, Box and Flow, you know, the Berries and the Soul Cycles of the world, Equinox, like all these higher end brands, and some of them like higher end, some of them, you know, more middle of the road. That's when that really began for me. And I started looking there and I'm like, okay, I think I'm always going to have good colleagues in the CrossFit space, especially being a consultant where, you know, 70% of my customers, 60% of my customers are CrossFitters. Maybe it's lower now. Maybe it's like 50%. But how do I break into and how do I become a guy who knows other people in the other? Because for all of you who listen to me, my best ideas that you've listened to or the things you come to me for, I promise I didn't learn from CrossFit land. No offense. Like, once I had made CrossFit South End happen and we were sitting pretty, there was very few. There were some things, and I can't think of any at the top of my head. I feel shitty saying that, but there were very few things I picked up on from the CrossFit industry beyond that. I picked up everything else I learned from looking at Orange Theory and F45 and Row House and a bunch of One Republic over in the UK, like these other brands, because nobody else was looking at them. That's why, like, it's so, some of you guys, like, man, you're so fucking smart. I'm like, you would probably have come to the same conclusion if you'd open your fucking eyes and not just look at what everyone else in your industry is doing. Like, your specific niche of the industry, CrossFit or yoga or Pilates is doing. Like, Pilates instructors need to be looking at what CrossFit gyms are doing. And CrossFit gyms need to be looking at what spin studios are doing and so on and so forth. That was just the discipline I had and I knew. So, that's what set me down the path, and I just made the effort to get into probably the meat of what this person's asking. I made a point to reach out to founders, owners. I slipped into their DMs. I sent emails to their generic info at, you know, Alchemy 365 fucking inboxes. I DM coaches that I saw were employed by them, and I told them, hi, I'm Stuart. I have this thing. I'd love to talk with someone. I love what you do. I think what you do is amazing. I would love to either tell your story on my podcast, or I'd love to, even before I was podcasting, I'd love to get a chance to talk with somebody or come by. Like, I flew. Like, I spent my own money. I would literally go for a day or two and go to New York or Minneapolis or California, and I would just go and see models, like different business models. And if my travels for work, like if I had a client I was going to go see or whatever, I'd stay a couple extra days and visit all the fucking unique gyms in that area. And I did that on my own dime. That cost me money, hotels and travel and food and everything. Like, but I did it because I knew the long-term benefits for my business. And I mean, it's paid off. It's paid off for Urban Movement. It's paid off for the consulting. I like to suck my own dick. I probably have the best breadth and depth of knowledge of the micro gym industry than most of the other guys in my space, because most of the other guys are just like in the CrossFit space or just in the fucking yoga space. Like, I fuck with it all. And I'm impressed by it all, and I learn by it all, because I see it all as one and the same. Like, there's so many principles we can be using that aren't just reserved for boutique fitness, but also warehouse fitness. And that's what I committed. Like, hey, I'm going to make colleagues out of them. And the other thing too, I guess, you know, because at that early of the stage, like 2016, 2017, I didn't have franchising and licensing like on the real, like on radar, like on lock. But I, you know, what about this, guys? Like, you ever think about this? I do. What if I fail? Like, what if Urban Movement doesn't make it? I've put myself in a position now where enough successful brands know me. If I go on the market and I'm looking for a W-2, let's say I was looking for a job, I don't think I'd have a hard time getting hired. Like, if it all came crashing down, me turning competitors into colleagues, or creating, you know, colleagues out of people in the industry, I don't think it'd be hard for me to get a job. Like, if I needed it, or if I needed like when I need to call on somebody, I can call on Jim Crowell, you know, former CEO of OPEX, and now he's involved in Morpheus with Joel Jameson. And anyway, yeah, it just your net worth is your net worth, or whatever that fucking cliche line is. That's really fucking true. So this idea of making a network of, and again, business owners doing better than you. If you guys have, like, I put on the Self-Made Summit, right? That was the rebranding summit in 2019, and I had all those prominent business owners down that own micro gyms. I was the least successful on paper. Not from dollars and cents. I'm talking like facility. Like, I was a 3-year-old micro gym, like with Urban Movement at that point. My brand was 3 years old. Metabolic had 10 locations. Alchemy was there. They were on 6 locations. Steve was there. He built a $3 million facility. He has fucking like 12 tenants. Steve's a goddamn fucking kingpin. Like, I was the freshman amongst a bunch of seniors, in my opinion. But that's why those are the kind of people I fuck with. I only fuck with people, you know, at that degree that are doing bigger and better than me. And that's just that. All right. Mouth is dry. Red Bulls are needed. This was a cool road trip project. If you listen to the whole thing, send me a DM. I don't think there's going to be many. But if you listen to the whole thing, shoot me a DM. Tell me what you thought. You fuckers know I love you. Until I see you in the next podcast, have a great fucking day.